Now Movie Mole's Jan Hawk and Fran Michelle are here to discuss the 2010 documentary Marwan Call. It's about a man who, after a vicious attack which left him brain damaged, created a 1-6 scale model of a World War II era town in his backyard as a form of therapy. A narrative version of this story is soon to be released called Welcome to Marwan, starring Steve Carell.
Good morning. This is Fran Michelle here with Jan Hawken to discuss Marwan Call, a documentary directed by Jeff Malmberg about the life and art of Mark Hodenkamp, who has created a 1-6 scale World War II era fictional Belgian town called Marwan Call, populated with Barbie dolls and action figures based on Hodenkamp and his friends, family, and acquaintances. Hodenkamp began the project as a form of therapy after being beaten into a coma by 5 men 10 years ago outside a bar in his small hometown of Kingston, New York. When a local photographer sees the photos Hodenkamp takes of scenes from the ongoing story of Marwan Call, Hogenkamp's work is reproduced in an art magazine and he's given a gallery show in New York. One of the things that the filmmaker acknowledged is that when he first heard about Hogenkamp's work and saw his work, he thought the idea of a grown man playing with dolls is a little bit creepy.
Well, I think we're able to enter into his world and the elaborate scenes he creates through kind of action figure, G.I. dolls, boy dolls and girl dolls, Barbie dolls, because we understand right at the beginning that he suffered a terrible trauma. And on one level, it's kind of a straightforward exploration of how a person who suffers trauma attempts to gain control over their world by manipulating and orchestrating the actions and the stories of people in this world who don't speak back or respond with their own agency like the people he encounters in daily life. He carries his world into a place where he can control every movement and all the storylines.
Yeah, and so when he has his alter ego in Marwan Call beaten up by Nazis, because, you know, the Nazis are always the bad guys, the SS comes to town and tortures Captain Hodenkamp. But he's rescued by the women of the town of Marwan Call, who burst in with their guns blazing and kill all the Nazis and save Captain Hodenkamp. So he can sort of reenact the trauma in ways that are safe and to give it a different outcome. Poor Captain Hodenkamp doesn't have to spend 9 days in a coma and another 40 in the hospital and relearn how to speak and relearn how to walk the way that his creator has to. Instead, he suffers, but he's rescued.
Unlike Vietnam vets or other wars that were part of this man's likely history and historical memory, this was a war with, as you said, very straight, clear lines and victorious soldiers and also women who the contemporary motifs of this world he creates involve Barbie dolls who are very much girl dolls, but they're dolls out in the world of men. But he really creates a kind of dominatrix characters out of these girls and out of the Barbie dolls. And that was very interesting. I think part of what might have been unsettling to many people was the tremendous interest he has in girl dolls, Barbie dolls, and all of their accessories, the kind of attending to their hair and the details of their clothes and all of that, which generally is coded as gay, to be that interested in the world of girls and female culture.
Yeah, I mean, he really is obsessively careful and detailed and meticulous in constructing these characters and the props that all work, and the gun has a little clip that comes out. I mean, he knows better, but he feels that they're real people. So when he walks through town, he drags the Jeep with the soldiers in it, partly to wear down the wheels so that they get a more realistic, worn-out look instead of having that seam from where they were made in the factory, but also because he feels that having the well-armed troops with him protects him. And so he feels safe. And then when he goes to bed at night, he has 3 of the girl dolls get tucked in a little doll bed next to him. And, you know, he wishes them good night. And there's one point in the film where he's redressing one of the dolls and her head pops off and he says, sorry. He apologizes to them. I mean, so they're clearly, you know, there's a really strong investment emotionally in these figures, which is a little bit, you know, is a little bit childlike. And, I mean, sort of fits with the idea that he's been traumatized and he has to relearn everything. And so he's sort of going back to this stage of play, of being able, the way that children can, to invest dolls with their own life and story and creativity. But, you know, if for an adult to be doing that might be kind of creepy, but there is something kind of childlike about the way he engages in it.
And the documentary kind of keeps him, on the one hand, in a childlike position. And so when he becomes very obsessed with one of the women in his world, who becomes a central figure and love interest in his imaginary world, this would be quite disturbing to have someone obsessed with you in such a way. But I think the fact that he's been traumatized, and in a way the film keeps him in a kind of childlike stance, and we might wonder if that cost something to keep him so much as this asexual person, that his sexuality remained very innocent and his obsessions remained innocent. But on the other hand, it was a kind of antidote to the way in which people who are marginalized through mental illness or other victims of trauma become kind of cast in a very maniacal way. I mean, this man was very creative, and there was a respectful tone throughout. He was the narrator of his own story. He struggled with things. He was quite thoughtful and reflective in many places.
And I think some of that is indicated by the fact that the way that Malmberg, the director of the film, shoots the figures from Marwencall, I mean, the very first images we see are the same kinds of shots that Hogenkamp does. That is, he gets down in among the characters and figures so that they're up there on the big screen looking life-size rather than Barbie doll size. So there's a kind of intimacy and entering into it visually that I think signals the kind of respect that the filmmaker invites us to have for this really impressive work of imagination.
Yeah, he has this craft as an artist that is quite complex, that requires a kind of close look to appreciate the complexity of what he does. And in a way, it opens up the question of the complexity of the world of children as well through their play. And I looked at Barbie dolls in a new way after watching this, because on one level, the Barbie doll culture is not just about anorexic figures. It's about girls or female figures as the bearers of commodity fetishism. It's about shopping and accessories and endless little purchases to equip properly your Barbie doll. And he takes that in a different direction in creating his world in response to his trauma.
Yeah, I think you underestimate the creativity of little girls playing with Barbies, Jan, when you say that, because I think that, I mean, on the one hand, clearly Barbie is a commodity and a hugely profitable one and designed to encourage girls to get her house, get her accessories, et cetera, et cetera.
Even but her I think little briefcase.
I think that the way that children play with these toys is not necessarily simply in line with the commodity culture that they are being, on another level, also inaugurated or invited into or trained in. And I think we could sort of see that in some ways in that move beyond that sort of commodity relation to these things. If we think about, or the few clues we have in the film about how he manages to finance this art project, because we're told at the beginning that he starts doing this because he no longer had coverage for therapy. And so his physical therapy and his psychological therapy ended in terms of any kind of professional help that he was going to get from medical professionals. And so it's his own project to heal himself that starts this. So he, you know, in working with the little tiny props and dressing the dolls, he's working on manual dexterity and hand-eye coordination and things that were really, because his hand shakes. He was a talented artist. We see some of his sketches from before the beating, but he can't draw anymore because his hands shake so much, and so he's trying to retrain himself physically, but also clearly playing out on a psychological level some of these things. But then you start to wonder, well, if he couldn't afford therapy, how come he could afford all these dolls? Because they're not cheap either. But there's a brief scene where we meet some folks in town who run the hobby shop, and they know Mark, and they want to help him out, and they know he's having a hard time, and so they kind of pass things his way. And so you get the sense that that these dolls and these props are not actually, you know, they're circulating through this network of sympathy and community rather than simply through the cash nexus. He's not just going out and buying all this stuff, but some of it's being given to him, and some of it he's making himself out of old scraps of things. So, I mean, it's really a sort of step outside of the purely commoditized relation to dolls and miniatures and those sorts of things.
This is Fran Michel and Jan Hocken today talking about the documentary Marwin Call. This also, I think, suggests that therapy for him is not just about creating an isolated world of his own making where he orchestrates people in a way he can't engage in reality. We also see him using these figures as representations of people he cares about in his world, kind of looking for the actual, kind of, we might say, the good objects, the nurturers or the sustaining people in his world. And he moves back and forth between the world he's created through this play and interactions with real people, which I think does characterize a lot of people who have been psychologically traumatized, that there is a way in which moving in and out of the everyday world is a real critical process. And it's not just about being in reality as we know it or outside of it.
Yeah, and I mean, we sort of can get a sense of the extent to which his relation with the filmmaker develops, because by the end of the film, we learn that there's a Jeff doll who's a filmmaker in the little world of Marwin Call, right? So that this character has become integrated into that world. But it's clear also that Hogenkamp wants to share it. I mean, the photographer who first meets him while he's dragging his little Jeep down the street and is sort of puzzled by this and stops to talk to him finds out about the whole story when Mark gives him a big fat envelope full of photographs with the captions on the back explaining the story. So he really wants to share this. He wants to be open about the world that he's created. He wants other people to see it and appreciate it. And so he is in a kind of constant process of moving back and forth and negotiating that line and that relation.
Another, I think, impressive theme in the documentary was the way in which the filmmaker and the subject negotiated the various aspects of his entry into the public stage. You really see him going through this process of putting his work out there, whether he wanted to or not, and often that's done behind the scenes. But I think that we were drawn into understanding his ambivalence as well about being exploited in ways he didn't anticipate, and engagement in the broader society in ways that he didn't understand where that would take him.
But I think it's safe to say that we both would recommend Marwin Call as a story that explores imagination and identity and gender and trauma and
memory and outsider art. And a little
for the Old Mole, this has been Fran Michel and Jan Hocken discussing the documentary Marwin Call.